Norm's Conceptual Corner.
Well, good morning. We've started the morning off with a spirited conversation about the new Star Wars movie, which will not be the subject of this episode of the Most Conceptual Corner.
I'm so ready for it.
I'm read up.
Yeah. But we are ready for something new.
Something blue, something borrowed, something new.
Yes, we are beginning our conversation on the philosophy of religion. We've been waiting for this for a while. I think I'm pretty stoked.
I am. This is a class I graduated before I was able to take of yours, and I was too lazy to take extra work on my last semester, so I was like, I'll just be friends with him instead of taking his class.
Nice. Good job.
I saw into the future and knew one day I would get the course for free.
Yeah. So. Yep. And that's our goal here on the project. So, just real quick introductions.
I'm Norm Schultz.
You died.
Wow. Yeah. Microphone didn't like me there. I'm Norm Schultz. Here with, of course, Nick Arcus.
Good morning.
And Brittany Rose now.
Morning.
And starting our conversation about philosophy of religion, I guess we're going to start off with some assumptions, right? That people understand what philosophy in general is. Or are we doing that?
I think we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Because we had the whole philosophy.
Greek word, roots.
Right.
Love of wisdom.
Well, I guess.
Guys in robes.
Yeah. Or sometimes not.
Yeah. Early Jedis.
Yeah. I guess what I want to say, just to remind everybody, is philosophy is, well, two things. One, philosophy is not necessarily interested in the same questions that people have on a subject. Because philosophers are interested in getting at the root, and a lot of times the way people think about an idea is not about the basis of the concept. It's making assumptions, and that's what philosophers don't want to do.
I always felt like, until I took philosophy classes, people think pretty like superficially about things, I think.
Sure.
And don't ask a lot of deeper questions.
Right.
They like to ask questions that directly apply to themselves.
Which, sure.
You know, that's human nature.
And I think that people take a lot of things for granted. And so when they hear a subject, there's a whole body of stuff that people take for granted, and they continue to run with it. And philosophers don't take those things for granted. They pick them apart. So that's going to shape our discussion quite a bit.
And that's why people get so pissed off if you try and, like, you know, Socratic method them.
Sure. I mean,
because no one likes having someone say, why do you think that?
Yeah.
Because people, like, no one asks themselves why.
Sure.
Why is scary.
Sure. Sure. And I guess the other thing about philosophy is that it's not super interested in being politically correct.
No.
Philosophy in general is not afraid of asking difficult, uncomfortable, weird questions.
I think that's the point,
right.
To not be politically correct.
Right.
Well, I think the point is that philosophers think that they're all searching for usually some kind of truth, capital T.
Right.
And so if that ends up not jiving with the popular idea of how something is, so what?
Right.
Like, in a matter of fact, better. Like, we feel like you've attained some sort of enlightenment whenever whenever I read some kind of deep philosophy. If it touches on things or modes of thought that I've not had before and takes me in new directions, I find that, you know, as fulfilling as I probably used to find spirituality whenever I was a believer.
Sure, sure.
Oh, I didn't know that you were.
I was raised as a Christian, Greek Orthodox.
Okay.
So, around about the age of between 12 and 15, fell out of it.
You probably didn't learn a whole lot about the Bible or religious beliefs, though, from the Greek Orthodox Church.
Well, I went to Sunday school on and off for about 6 years, like first grade to sixth grade-ish.
Okay.
But not any,
so you did learn
a little bit, but you know you couldn't go to church because we were old school Greek Orthodox, and the priest would get up there and, you know, the sermon was in Greek.
Oh, right. Sure.
I don't know. I know when it's a Kyrie eleison, Kyrie eleison.
Right.
That's really all I know.
Right.
I asked some old Greek lady there once, like, I don't know what he's saying. She's like, no one really does. Just cross yourself and everyone else does.
That's funny.
I don't know why I became an atheist. Doesn't make any sense.
You know, I went to a Baptist high school. So all of us have these religious.
Yeah.
Right. I had no idea. Sorry.
Well, no, because, like, Norm was uber religious.
Well, were you? I was never Uber, but I was in a high school, so it was like during this formative time of my life, brainwashed
kind of. Sure, sure.
And then once I graduated, I went, oh wait, never mind.
Yeah.
I think your story is more interesting because of how old you were whenever you finally got out of it. Because I think that's rare. Like, by the time you're that age, I think most people are set.
Yeah, I was 27.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, and, you know, being a Jehovah's Witness and being in a few congregations that had academics in them, I learned a lot about, like, the beliefs of other religions. And as I've said before, Jehovah's Witnesses are really good at picking apart the ridiculous beliefs of other religions and how things like the Trinity doctrine or and immortality of the soul, that those ideas don't make sense. So they actually share some of the ideas that atheists have.
Really?
And they use critical thinking techniques, and they teach their members those techniques.
Huh. I know and, nothing about that.
Yeah, how to deal with arguments, how to present an argument for when you're giving lectures, sermons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're male, you're trained in that kind of stuff from, like, very early age. I was given lectures when I was 7 years old.
It's so funny how that probably informed your ability to be a philosopher now.
Yeah, clearly.
And it's funny to me, like, what it seems to me like the thing that was the catalyst to your leaving. If I think we've told this before, you said that you decided to go take a class on evolution, so you knew how to debunk it.
And I just happened to also take a logic class that same semester.
Oh, double trouble!
And so, yeah, there was an attack on all fronts. The other thing is, I was really good at logic.
Yeah.
It was the first course that I took that I really enjoyed and thought, oh, wow, I can actually really do this stuff.
Me too. Did you feel like – I felt like it was some kind of weird like nirvana-like awakening where I was like, oh.
It just clicked.
It made me better at other things that I wasn't that great at.
Yeah.
Hattori. Like, that's the name for it.
What?
Hattori.
Is it?
Yeah. Huh. That's for
– What I'm hearing is clitori.
Ah, gross.
I'm hearing Kill Bill, Hattori Hanzo.
I'm like – I don't understand what's going on here.
How long has your wife been gone?
We're going Freud on this one.
What's the real word then?
Hattori. Hattori. I think that's the name of it. It's the way Zen, like that moment of awakening.
Oh,
it's called having a Hattori, where you suddenly realize something.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think that's the name. We'll have to Google it to make sure that's
why. Well, I had that in spades when I took that class. I mean, most of it was I didn't know that there were such thing as logical fallacies. And if you don't know about them, I just didn't know that I was committing so many.
Sure.
In my really? Everyday reasoning. And I used to think I was a pretty reasonable person before.
Right.
At that point. I mean, I felt like I was pretty – I mean, I was intelligent at that point already, but
I think that you really can be intelligent and not logical.
Yeah. Well, clearly, I think. It's just if you don't know those rules, it's easy to do it.
Yes.
And not realize – and, like, you just don't realize you're doing them before.
Yes.
It really made me hate the way I had been talking for a long time. I was like, oh. And I think it makes you smarter automatically just because if you don't make those few logical fallacies, you automatically sound smarter than you are, probably.
Well,
because you're less likely to make some kind of statements that this outright ridiculous.
I think the initial reaction when you learn about those fallacies is you just – the number of beliefs you have goes down.
Yeah.
I think you should never have Mine a did. Belief.
Huh?
There should never be a belief. Like, you should never believe something. You should know it. Or think it's bullshit.
You're a scientist.
Well.
Well, I'm about to irritate Brittany right now.
What?
Unfortunately, what you just said is a belief.
I know.
Well, this is why this gets back to what philosophers do with irritate people.
It is. Hey, I'm not saying I'm perfect.
No, but in the spirit of what you're saying, I like, which is that you should reduce the number of of unsupported beliefs to the minimum. You can't get rid of them.
No,
because there because are some you have to start idea, somewhere.
Yeah.
And first principles, right? This is the history of philosophy. Some ideas you have to accept and some ideas you can't. But I think, that's what happened to me when I took a logic course. The number of my beliefs just went down.
Yeah.
I just became skeptical of a lot of things. And then religion was an obvious one.
Yeah.
Well, wait, I've never actually been skeptical about the beliefs of my own religion.
Yeah.
You know, I've been skeptical of other religions. Why don't I actually do that same stuff to my own religion? And when I started to, it began to crumble pretty quickly. And
introspection, it doesn't work with religion always.
Yeah.
You know, what we were just saying reminds me of some of that reading that we did for this out of the Oxford encyclopedia on the idea between like someone who's a realist and someone who's like the non-realist type of approaches to philosophy. And I think that we're probably definitely more in that realist approach.
Remind me of what this distinction means.
That's the kind of thing where someone like the strict line, I think, realists are the kind of people who believe that propositions had to be testable, at least in
principle. Oh, you mean in epistemology. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you
were talking about. Yeah, and like, I mean, that kind of touches on a little bit of what we're going to be going into here, I think. But it seems like the people who, like, there was another approach to that that they were calling like a non-realist approach that people who are religious usually end up having to take.
Well, yeah, we're going to get into that later. Yeah. That one's a tough one because that requires a fair amount of scaffolding.
And that'll have to be a different episode, eh?
Probably.
We're going to do an entire episode on basically religious epistemology.
We should, because nice. That messed with me when I was reading that, because I considered my realism to be a really good way of doing it at first until I started reading some of the counter stuff to it. I was like, I should be careful.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that it should be said about this series, not only for our listeners, but us, mm-hmm. is that this philosophy of religion, I think, is a more difficult subject than ethics. I think ethics, the arguments about, you know, ethical theories and then applied ethics even more so, are intuitive. Mm-hmm. We can understand how they work out and contemplate them fairly easily. The arguments that you end up covering in philosophy of religion get abstract and weird rapidly. And require a few more philosophical skills that, you know, basically we'll work with along the way. But, things are going to get weird. They're going to get weird probably the next episode. Cool. With one of the strangest arguments that I've ever heard in any philosophy, the ontological argument.
Yeah.
And there is this side to philosophy of religion that – is growing in support in the last maybe 15 years, that philosophy of religion should go away as an academic field.
I actually wanted to, you know...
What?
It's one of the things that we read. What was that guy's name? Parsons, who said that he was not going to teach anymore?
I don't remember his name offhand.
Why is
well, yes, reason? Keith Parsons.
I kind of am very sympathetic towards his view in that, for my money, I think that the notions of whether or not religion is true, to my satisfaction, has been dealt with. And I mean, Christopher Hitchens used to say that he felt that, you know, Greek philosophers of old, sufficiently for him, dealt with whether or not religion was true or not.
Sure.
And so for me, I think it isn't. And I think that this guy is saying, like, you know, you don't want to have a class on in an astronomy we're not going to teach, you know, let's teach this section here saying that the Earth is the center of the universe at this point. We know it's not.
Right.
Really, at this point, for me, going into this, the philosophy of religion interests me more from a historical context. I like mm-hmm. history, so I want to learn about what people believe and believed, but I don't, you know, for me, like, the idea that I'm going to study this and from a more of a theological point of view is done for me. I'm just...
Right.
I'm already satisfied that these arguments don't hold any water or get off the ground. You know, when I studied astronomy, I took a class that kind of taught you the history of astronomy too. Mm-hmm. And so they taught you the old methods and theories that people were using, and it was, I liked seeing a evolution of knowledge.
Right.
And so that's what I want to take from this a little bit. I don't know if that's what I should be looking into this for, but that's something I hope to get out of this a bit, is kind of enhancing my knowledge of these arguments that they use and have used historically from that kind of context.
I think we're safe doing that, because I don't think we're going to have a whole lot of staunch religious people listening to us that we need to convert.
Right.
Or deconvert, or whatever else you want to call it.
Sure.
So I think that's a safe
I think spot. It wouldn't matter if we did.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this more. I just kind of wanted to, like, throw that out there. We're going to talk about it more thoroughly at the end of the episode, I think. But I think that what we're doing is totally – we're going to do something totally legit, because cool. we are going to look at these arguments that have been historically presented. Mm-hmm. And along the way, in order to simply wrap our head around them, we're going to learn about a lot about philosophy in general. So this is very useful. And then you can ask the question of whether that's generally useful in colleges. And, you know, we're going to talk about this after, but my general answer is I think it is worthwhile. What's not probably worthwhile is the fact that it's not done properly.
Right.
So we'll get there. So before we actually talk about whether philosophy of religion should go away, we should think about what actually philosophy of religion is. We understand what philosophy is in general. I have on my notes here a little list of defining what philosophy of religion is by what it's not.
I was going to say that might be easier here. And that one reading you gave us, it seemed like everyone had their own notion of what philosophy of religion is.
Which is notorious in philosophy. And so, you know, philosophy of religion, even though I'm not a philosopher, professional philosopher anymore, I know that philosophy of religion is actively changing right now, probably because of the changing landscape of religion in the United States. Christianity is slowly but steadily on the decline in the United States, and people are subscribing to alternative kinds of religion and spirituality. And so I think that philosophy of religion as a field is reacting to that. And I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about things that we're not doing.
Okay. Before you notice, just so you know, sometimes I feel like I'm getting a buzz from your mic. I think it might be...
From my mic?
Really? Whenever,
well, I think it just might be clipping a little bit.
Maybe it's your ear.
I'm not hearing it.
Or it could be your brain.
It's a tumor.
It's not a tumor. It might just be me. It's probably just the headphones then.
Yeah. We'll fix it in post.
I'll think about it deeper.
So, first of all.
You're going to have to edit out my coffee.
Oh, no, we're letting it fly. First of all, philosophy of religion is not the same thing as religious studies. So religious studies and philosophy of religion, other than the fact that they are about religion, let's pause the thing. Actually, do you want a lozenge?
Do you have one?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's okay, because I'm going to have to edit out the pause anyways. That's okay.
Seamless edit.
That's a fine cue. So, okay, and... the first thing that we should cover is what philosophy of religion is not. And it needs to be said that philosophy of religion is not religious studies. In fact, other than that they're both about religion, it's pretty difficult for them to be less the same.
Really, we can make a pretty big list here. I mean, it's not a car. It's not a yard.
It's not an animal, mineral, or vegetable.
Oh, no. Well, let's just distinguish it from other academic fields that have religion in them.
Got it.
How about that?
Well, that was good.
So when you take religious studies, you're going to learn a lot about other religions and what they believe and the kinds of practices that they engage in, the kinds of people, demographics, where they're located, maybe even some anthropology of them, where they originated, maybe some interesting theories associating certain religious beliefs with things like climate and other kinds of ideas, where they practice, how they think, etc. We're not doing hardly any of that. It's odd, but in philosophy of religion, since philosophy is interested in truth with a capital T, somehow or other, you're trying to answer these fundamental questions. You actually aren't super interested in the things that people believe if they take the answers to those questions for granted uncritically. So you don't care what, you know, how many times a Buddhist meditates. You don't care whether the Old Testament completely supersedes the New Testament completely supersedes the Old Testament or not. You don't care about, okay, well, can, you know, the angel Gabriel travel faster than one of the lower angels? You don't care about any of that stuff.
You don't care about whether a wafer actually becomes the body of Christ.
My philosophers of religion might care about that, but that would be on the upper range. Mm. Those would mostly be apologetics. So philosophers of religion who are doing it with a different perspective. And actually on my list is that we're not doing apologetics.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to that. Why, though? Why is philosophy of religion not interested in these beliefs? Because none of those beliefs matter if God doesn't exist. Then this is just an exercise of things that people do when they're, you know, believing in an odd thing. And then it turns into psychology.
Right.
So it just – if you don't believe that God exists or maybe not just God exists, though, philosophy of religion is pretty emphasized on theism or non-theism. There's a few other big concerns, but that's one of the biggest, whether God exists or not. if you can't answer that one well, then all these other things just become some other field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's why some people don't like the idea of it being a thing. I think that some of the people who don't advocate teaching philosophy of religion have decided that, like, you know, the idea of whether or not theism is true, there's no reason to believe it is, so there's no real reason to continue with this.
Yeah.
I don't agree, but I think that I do think that that's kind of where some of them come from, is just that, you know, we're arguing over whether or not Superman could beat the Hulk in a lot of situations without establishing whether or not they actually are real or fictional things.
And I don't believe that philosophy of religion as an academic field should go away.
No, me neither.
I just worry about it not being taught properly. And I don't think that it is the same as arguing whether Superman could beat the Hulk.
Because he probably could.
I guess two reasons why. One is not actually a reason why. One is I think that it would be totally fascinating to have a philosophy course in superheroes. I would have no problem with that.
No, me too.
That'd be fun.
Because you could learn a lot about ideas from that. Maybe not a full course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
I was just being a jerk.
But, you know.
It makes sense.
We're actually going to have an argument about the existence of God where we're going to talk about superheroes. So this will be right Uber up your gallery.
Should we high five now? Or?
But the other thing is that I think comparing it to superheroes is not really legit, because it's not the case that literally billions of people on the planet believe the superheroes are real. That's not true. It is true that billions of people on the planet believe in some form of God. And so I think from that, it just adds the gravitas of this is an idea that is worth considering.
Absolutely, yeah.
It doesn't mean that the idea is more likely to be true just because a large number of people believe it. But I think it is a legitimate factor in whether it's worth thinking about.
I mean, I think it clearly is, considering how many people believe.
Yeah.
And how central it is to so many people's lives.
And it's not just whether they believe. It's how much it affects their life.
And how it affects their actions.
And affects
us. And how
us.
Those actions affect us.
That's right.
I think for me, religion to me seems like a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
And it's more dangerous the more people that buy into it.
Sure.
So getting rid of philosophy of religion, I think, is letting a, for lack of a better word, disease run rampant that is not catching, but it's damaging and hurting other people in other cultures.
Yes.
So, you become a carrier for it. So.
Yeah. It's a...
But here's where...
it's a terrible thing.
Here's the rub, though. Mm. And you, I think, know this. You, I bet, don't. And I bet going to be interested in your reaction to this. Mm-hmm. Here's the problem. The problem with philosophy of religion is that most philosophers who are interested in philosophy of religion are religious.
Oh, that makes sense.
And so when they teach philosophy of religion, I think they teach it in an incorrect way.
Yeah.
They teach it – and there was an article like a week or so ago about how damaging it is that the major news networks portray most topics in a – try to do it in a fair and balanced way. Mm-hmm. So on things like climate change, for example, they try to present climate change deniers, and then that alleviates any claim that they are being unfair. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that when they do that, they seem to convey the message that these other ideas are legitimate.
Yeah.
And
not all ideas are created equal. I'm sorry.
And that is exactly my problem with philosophy of religion. Philosophy of religion is taught by people who are religious. Yeah. And therefore, the way they teach it is they think that these arguments really do have an evenness to one side or the other, right, that you're legitimate for believing either way.
Validity.
Right. This is the way someone like, you know, what is his name, Daniel Lane Craig would teach it.
Oh, he actually would teach it even more the other way.
Because he is an apologetic also.
Sure.
So that's...
And so I think that's wrong. And I think that does probably do some damage. Mm-hmm.
And I've also heard that, you know, when people like us who are more from an atheist standpoint teach this, we're more likely to not want to be just interested in the, you know, the three main Judeo-Christian religions, mm-hmm, you know, because why not? Just because a religion isn't practiced anymore by millions of people,
right?
It was at one point. It's just history now.
Oh yeah, so this was.
Why not teach those why not examine those with just as much so-called potential validity?
Yeah, this was in one of the articles, right?
Yeah. That, and I've always, and that's how I feel too. And I feel like you're probably more prone to get that from a professor coming at it from the standpoint of it's of an atheist, just because you're not wedded to the idea of, you know, this class will be primarily presenting the Christian point, but we'll cover Judaism because it came before, and
you know what's funny,
you know,
about that?
Islam is new, but they're not going to really focus on any you know Aboriginal type of religions or old school, yeah, or the Greek ones,
sure.
And what's funny is those are all the founding beliefs that created Christianity as we know. I mean, if you look into Babylonian religions, half of our celebrations and our little thoughts and ideas came from Babylonian religions.
Well, also I think they evolved from them.
Well, the way Platonian thinking and Aristotle thinking definitely informed it too. I think
that's probably even about half.
And that's why again, that's from a historical perspective, I want that kind of stuff. That's what I really enjoy
understanding about. That connection.
Yeah, I think it helped. It's just more fun for me. Like,
well, they're all created.
I'm a history nerd like that though, so I can understand that might be kind of boring for people. But
I don't think so.
I like it.
I think that when I taught philosophy of religion, I think the students were really interested in the correlation between the Judeo-Christian God and Plato, and a lot of them were shocked.
I imagine a ton would be shocked. I would have been back whenever I used to be religious because we never ever were taught that kind of stuff.
No. Just to be clear, though, we want to give credit to where credit is due. This idea that philosophy of religion, it's interesting to think about it entertaining these other religions. This is an idea that we got from John Loftus, an article that we'll put up on the website. I'm calling for an end to the philosophy of religion as a discipline in secular universities. He says, you know, for example, one of the things that is seemingly assumed in philosophy of religion is that because a religion is dead – that means that it's not worth studying anymore. And he says, why is that? There's no reason that because a religion is dead that doesn't mean it's not true any more than believing that a religion is active that is a reason to believe that it's correct. That's a ridiculous assumption.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How irritated would God be if he was actually Zeus and no one believed in it anymore? He's like, I'm right here. Whenever people are like, where is God? Looking for God. He's like, I'm right here.
It's so funny that whenever you talk about these
things, I'm here.
Whenever you talk about these things, you end up gravitating.
Exactly. I'm here. God, me. That these people make me so angry.
Nick is here too much. I think he might be too here.
I told you I listened to the Force Awakens soundtrack on the way over.
He's energized. All right. Well, first thing, cool your jets, and the second thing is you're gravitating into a philosophy of religion argument. And it's so funny when you get into these discussions, the way people talk ends up being in one of the bins of a true philosophical art. You're talking about the hiddenness argument. You don't realize it, but no, you are. Okay, good. So, we're going to get into all this stuff. And by the way, you can't hear this, but I'm rubbing my hands together right now.
Oh, you can hear it. I can hear it.
Good. I'm eager to get these things started.
Yeah, me too. I've been waiting for this Eclipse series. So,
let's talk a little bit more about what philosophy of religion isn't. Philosophy of religion is not the same thing as psychology of religion. Psychology of religion is these are courses that are offered in the psychology departments or in the religious studies departments, usually in universities. And what these relate to is how does the brain either react to or cause some of the religious beliefs.
Oh.
And there's some interesting stuff there. There's a whole field called neurotheology.
Mm-hmm. So you mean it's not like God going to a therapist and talking it out?
It's not. Believe it or not.
It's not Jesus sitting down and someone going, tell me about your father.
It's not.
Well,
but
this will be kind of weird.
How does that make you feel, Nick?
Enlightened?
Look, neurotheology, they study that they've concluded that there are specific areas of the brain that if stimulated will cause a person to generally be more favorable to religious kinds of beliefs.
They're talking about what if you removed it and what it would do to your personality.
Sure.
I mean, those are also the kind of people who created what's called the God helmet.
Sure. You can activate those centers.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I think that's kind of stuff that Sam Harris is probably into now from a neuroscience point of view.
Oh, I think he's probably gone past all that now. He doesn't even – he's kind of looking into neuroscience genuine. In short, though, for those who are listening who might not be familiar with this, these areas of the brain, it's been shown that if you stimulate them, That they can make a person more amenable to religious belief. And here's why. That they relate to the brain sensing other beings. So, you know, for example, some animals do not sense other actual beings. They just sense movement, mm-hmm. and they run away from the movement or, you know, swim out of the direction or whatever. Other organisms can tell the difference either from hearing or sight or other sensory perception that, oh, that thing over there, that's an organism.
Yeah.
And I need to react to it. And then a higher level of that is, oh, that's not only an organism, that is an organism who has its attention on me.
Yeah. I think that Michael Shermer had a good analogy for this when he says that it's kind of an evolved type of thinking for the brain. So right. like he said, he always, I think his analogy is,
imagine, he got it from Daniel Dennett.
Did he? Yeah. He said, imagine you're, you know, back in the savannah, you know, as an early primate,
sure.
and you hear a rustle in the leaves or in the grass by you. Now, is that just the wind?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you think it's, you know, or is it a predator? So he says, right. well, if you think it's a predator and it turns out to be the wind, you've made an error, but it's a harmless error and you live.
Right.
But if you think that it's just the wind and it's a predator, you die.
Right. So good reason that there would be evolutionary pressure to have a sensory apparatus.
To give agency
that
to it.
Works yeah. with the brain to process information to favor the idea that, oh, we need to stay away from things and those are likely predators.
And it gives rise to the idea in the brain that there is a being there. That
right.
There's something is there. That even if I can't see it, something's there.
Right. And if you manipulate the brain enough, you can take away the specificity of there being a being there to there just being a being somewhere out there that I am not alone. And this is an experience that a lot of people get when they pray or meditate in other kinds of states. So look, there's a lot of interesting stuff about brain states and religious belief. Mm-hmm. But, you know, someone who and during the course of this class, I'm going to repeatedly refer to, and I guess I should come up with a term for this, an academically sophisticated Christian is what I'm going to say. An academically sophisticated Christian is not going to be that interested in this stuff, dealing with the brain and its interaction with religious belief, because they believe that you can reasonably show that there is a God and it's worth believing in that God, and that whatever is going on in the brain is just a consequence of the fact that we were made to sense God. Ah. And, you know, there's really not a whole lot of science that you can do to answer that question.
That's okay. All right.
I hate that you're making me understand Ben Carson, just so you know. I hate that.
That's using your belief to justify your belief. That's circular reasoning.
I don't think it is actually. I think it's basically, here's how they would get out of this, and you can poo-poo it all you want, and okay. I agree with the poo-pooing, but okay. I'm going to grant that it's at least possible, and therefore we can move on to another discussion.
All right.
If we evolve that part of the brain, they in general believe that God somehow guided evolution to result in us, and so he would, of course, guide the ability to sense.
I just got to say one thing, and we can move on.
Sure.
You're saying that God did this, that's why we know that God is there?
No, but that's why that's why the brain works that way. Not that's why God is there. There are other reasons why God is there.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They just justify the fact that the brain does this by, well, of course the brain would do this if there was a God out there who wanted you to be able to sense him.
Right. It's kind of like saying
still
like
circular. It's well, bothering me. It's all right.
I know.
I think their argument is like, you know, you're saying, well, I'm able to live inside my house. And they're saying, well, of course you can. The architect of the house wanted you to be able to live in it.
But that's assuming that there was an architect.
Right.
But they're not assuming. They're going to prove it to you in another way.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So they're
that's
saying
the point.
Yeah, like
okay.
They believe they've already proved it. Other arguments probably.
Well, that's okay. What we're going to get into.
Yeah.
Okay. The arguments for God's existence. And look, if they don't believe that, then you're right. They are circular.
Okay.
But an academically sophisticated Christian, that's an ask.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, I'm going to make it a little easier. I'm going to call them an ASCII.
Okay.
Academically sophisticated Christian individual.
Ah.
An ASCII.
Okay.
I have fun doing that. Anyways.
Acronym.
ASCIIs are going to be on board with philosophy of religion. They're going to draw very different conclusions, and we're going to talk about their perspective.
Okay.
So, okay. Neurotheology, psychology of religion, terribly interesting, worth studying, not philosophy of religion. It's just not. We're also not doing religious philosophy. We're doing philosophy of religion.
Religious philosophy is probably more of a theology type of thing, right?
Religious philosophy would be looking at what does it mean that God exists?
Yeah.
Okay. What does it mean for God to inspire the Bible?
You're starting with the capital T truth and
right.
explaining it.
Okay. What does right. it mean to be a Christian? That's something that is
to be a good Christian.
Right. Is it possible? Is pluralism possible? Now, look, there is a little bit of overlap between philosophy of religion and religious philosophy. I think religious philosophy is very interested in whether it's possible to be different forms of Christian and still be okay.
Yeah.
Or even other religions and still be okay. And I actually think that that's a legitimate topic in philosophy of religion as well.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It from the perspective of if we've been swatting the arguments of the Judeo-Christian God, is it okay to give some ground to those arguments under the idea that in general there is a belief that is legitimate about there being something out there?
Right.
Is it okay to make that more specific intellectually? In other words, yeah, is there good reason to believe that there is some entity out there that is responsible for the creation of the universe? Mm-hmm. And if so, would it be okay to actually say things that you don't know, like that that being is the Judeo-Christian God, and is that still intellectually honest?
Okay.
Those are legitimate questions in philosophy of religion as well. So there's some overlap.
Yeah.
But we're going to try to not make any assumptions in philosophy of religion. We're not going to assume that God exists. We're not going to assume that because something can't be explained, you need to give a being to that, for example.
It makes an ass out of you, an option.
Right? So that we're not starting from those assumptions. And then the last thing on my list is we're not doing apologetics. Apologetics, it's funny, when people first run into this word, it sounds like someone saying, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I apologize. And in a way, it is. In a way, apologetics is apologizing for not having enough evidence for God by trying to supply it.
And also by saying, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. Bye.
The most illegitimate apology ever.
But he believes in you.
Yes. Yes. So apologetics, and this is a key difference, and we're going to talk about this in depth later. I would like to right now divide people who are religious into two camps. The faith camp and the evidence camp. The faith camp is people who don't give a shit about the evidence. The evidence is irrelevant. In fact, any evidence that you give is so irrelevant that it just strengthens their belief no matter what the evidence suggests. Those are people who say, I don't need any evidence, I have faith. And we're going to talk about that proper in one of the episodes. What does that actually mean, and is it a legitimate way of looking at the world? And spoiler alert, it's not.
Uh-oh.
Okay? No. It's not a legitimate way of looking at the world.
I have faith that we're going to talk about this later.
Yes, and I have
I'm
that.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
I have faith as well, but I'm not sorry, damn it. Look, apologetics, what they get right is that they're in the evidence camp. They actually believe that the evidence matters. And I think that that's the only reasonable way to be. The thing that I think they get wrong is that they genuinely believe that there is evidence for the existence of God.
Yeah. I used to love to listen to Christopher Hitchens talk about this, about the people who are apologetics.
Yeah.
Because he always thought it was endearing that they cared about evidence so much that they tried – they yes. really tried to present it to him.
Yes. This
was always – bad evidence.
If you want to be condescending, you could say how quaint.
That's what he kind of used to say, his attitude towards
yes.
it.
Yes.
I miss Christopher Hitchens, got to say.
Right. I don't like doing that because, again, ASCII's academically sophisticated Christian individuals. It's tell you, it's going to stick. It's going to...
I like it. I'll use it.
Hashtag ASCII.
Not two eyes, one
just
eye.
Just one.
Okay.
I like that it's lowercase, too.
No, very good. ASCII's are at least interested in getting into it with you. With talking with someone who has faith, there's no point.
Yeah.
There's no point in even talking with them much other than to talk to them about the nature of faith.
Yeah. But they don't like that. That makes I feel that makes people hostile towards the conversation. Does. If you question,
we don't care if they don't like it or not.
No, we don't. But
on that one, I'm sorry.
Unless they carry concealed. Other than that,
So my stepmother, I come from a broken home.
Guys. Okay.
So does everyone in my generation. my stepmother is uber religious.
Okay.
And
that means that she drives a kind of taxi-like service that's religious.
Takes you from one church to another
for a fee. She has a little mustache on the front of her car.
A Jesus mustache, if you will.
Jesus Cristo.
I see. I see.
And she and my sister-in-law, they live together in this big old house. I don't know the background. But anyway, every time they post something on Facebook that's Christian, I start a fight with them because it's fun.
Okay.
And they said something about, damn Muslims shouldn't come to our country, you know, the general thing.
Sure.
And I went, I'm glad you're holding to those Christian beliefs. And of course we got into it. And by the end of it, my stepmother goes, well, you know, I'm not a violent person, but I will exercise my Second Amendment right. And I went to organize a militia?
Right.
And I was like, wait, are you threatening me? She's like, no, I'm not threatening you. But that's kind of the point. So just a little aside, you can edit that out, but that was a funny story.
Hashtag, I'm sorry you feel that.
Yeah. Right.
I laughed so hard. I was like, gosh, you are terrifying.
And this is funny. This is
an island.
It's so funny. I mean, again, you're drifting into a proper philosophy of religion topic.
Yeah.
And that topic is, if it is true that there is not enough evidence for God, what should we do about that? And this is where we're going to get in the end about talking about Sam Harris's basic ideas, mm-hmm. which, you know, the gist of those is faith itself needs to go away as a form of reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very dangerous form of reasoning because people have weapons and have access to greater technology weapons over time. And this is not something that we should stand still for. And this is, again, why I'm not against teaching philosophy of a religion, because it is a faith killer and it should be a faith killer. Mm-hmm. But I'm sad because some people who teach philosophy of religion do not teach it that way.
Yeah.
No, but I think
they should at least destroy the idea of faith.
For that reason alone, I think it should be taught. And that's why I would never say it should go away, because it was from your ethics class, but you recommended that I read The End of Faith. And that really after I read the End of Faith, then I read Letter to a Christian Nation,
right?
And it was like a gateway drug. Then I read The God Delusion, and then I read God is Not Great.
Sure.
So, you know,
yeah.
Then I was hooked on watching YouTube videos of debates with people. You know, it spiraled out of control.
Sure,
clearly,
sure, but, sure.
Gotta say, God Delusion. High fives.
That's right.
That was a good book.
Well, we're not doing apologetics. Apologists. Try to justify religious belief by use of reason. That's a good thing in general to do. The outcome of that, though, needs to not be set up. It needs to be examined for whether the arguments work out.
Right.
And I think that's where things get dicey. But regardless, philosophy of religion, I think, is a great exercise that every individual should engage in, because it is finally an attempt to try to, in an unbiased way, if you do it properly, examine, is there really a reason to believe in any of this shit?
Not only that, but that's one of, like, a lot of people would say that that's one of the fundamental ideas that people are always questioning. Like, where do I come from? Why are we here?
Sure.
This is one of the best ways to get at that. And to really examine it in a way that you might actually try and find yourself some truth, capital T, that actually has some weight.
I would argue that it's the only legitimate way to do it.
For me, I think so too. Yeah.
The only legitimate way to examine whether a belief is valid is to try to be objective, step back, look at the arguments, weigh them, look at the counter arguments, etc., and then see whether it works out. And by definition, if you're doing that on religion, you're doing philosophy of religion.
You're doing philosophy in general. That's kind of what philosophy really is.
Sure. Some other things that I want to cover.
It's also the scientific method.
Well, yeah, this is why philosophy and science started the same, and this is natural why I've been telling people that philosophy and science are not that different.
Hand in glove.
Let's get some terms out of the way, though. So for one thing, if we're going to do philosophy of religion, what the fuck is a religion?
are all encompassing.
Look, this is a really hard question, actually. What counts as a religion? But and the, I think it gets muddled in a couple of ways.
Well, basically, if you don't pay taxes, then it's a
religion. Look, I think that something being a religion gets muddled in two ways. One, it gets muddled because the word religion is frequently used as a metaphor. Mm-hmm. It's not used as in a legitimate way. So, you know, for example, we were talking about Star Wars before the episode, and we see that Nick is wearing a Star Wars T-shirt, and I know
this is a podcast, not a video.
I know that Nick is very into Star Wars, and we get into interesting spirited discussions about Star Wars in the context of science fiction in general. I could say that Nick is a religiously Star Wars fan. Mm. That Star Wars is his religion. I could say those and be meaningful.
Amen.
And
love
that
is my religion.
Love is your religion. Yeah. Oh, isn't that nice? Oh. Let's just have a pause. but those Sorry are just that. Using the word as a metaphor. Obviously, mm-hmm. I don't literally mean that that Nick is a religious fanatic for Star Wars. I don't literally mean that he genuinely believes this stuff, and that it guides his life, etc., and goes to church, and you know, the Church of Star Wars, which I'm sure on this planet of 6 billion people, there is a Church of Star Wars somewhere.
There is. Yeah, the Church of the Jedi. It's scary.
Really?
Mostly in Europe.
Wait, is really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew you were going to react that way, but I knew that already this was.
I believe that there are actually U.S. service people who have on their dog tags Church of the Jedi.
Yeah. Yep. And the thing is that I don't think they mean it in the same way as like the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster people.
No, they don't.
Oh, yeah, I'm part
They're
of
not that strong in a force. They don't disappear whenever they die like Yoda. But right. You know.
But they are moving some objects.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway.
Sorry.
So I basically when I teach philosophy of religion, what I do is I try to get students into a group activity where they basically write out things that they associate with religion and then we talk about them. And we try to basically do Venn diagrams with them of whether these things are exclusively religious, defining characteristics of religion, or if they're just secondary. I'll give you an example of a secondary characteristic of a philosophy of religion, the social aspect.
Right.
The fact that it is a group of people who get together and care about each other is a part of religion. It's actually an important part of religion, but it is not a defining characteristic of a religion.
Not the primary focus of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that I've gotten into conversations with people, philosophers and not, who are call themselves religious, but in reality they're not because they don't believe in God and don't commit to any of the other spiritual beliefs. They just go and are part of the tradition. And so I tell them, well, look, you're not religious. You're a member of a social club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they usually find that annoying, but whatever.
It's true. It's like all the nice holiday songs that we get.
Yeah.
It's not the primary focus of it, but I used to sing in choir and I like them, damn it. So
oddly enough, you could make the argument that the Dominican kind of branch of Catholicism is not really religious.
Well, I don't practice Santeria.
No, we're not doing that.
Okay.
I think it's the Dominicans. They're basically very skeptical about all of the religious tenets, even arguments for the existence of God. Hmm. When they talk about God, they just refer to their hope that God is there.
Okay.
They don't actually necessarily believe that he is. And it's a tradition that is rich with philosophy of religion as well.
Okay.
And so I don't think there's a large number of people who associate with this, and maybe there are some who do and don't really understand the beliefs. And again, I think that it's the Dominicans. I sometimes get the kind of branches of Catholicism mixed up. But regardless, you can ask these kinds of questions. So defining features, these are features that in order for something to be called that, it really has to have it. So, you know, like a defining feature of a shirt is something that's meant to be worn over the torso.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If it's not meant to be worn over the torso, then it's not a shirt. That doesn't mean it's the only thing that has that. But it can't be that without it. Mm-hmm.
I find that this is a useful method for defining a lot of things.
Sure.
And I think it was probably first in your ethics class that we did this.
Yeah, this is necessary and sufficient conditions.
Right. And just like, it's just taking a piece of paper or anything and writing out aspects that need to be there. I think it one a fun one if people want to do a thought experiment. What does it mean to be a person or alive?
Sure.
And well, you can make yourself.
We talked about that.
And you can also make yourself a list of things that are not part of that as well and like see where they fall and that sort of thing. I think that's a really helpful way when it comes to kind of vague or ambiguous things to kind of help you arrive on the same page or at least a common starting point of let's agree that we at least need these factors in order to proceed.
Right. So I've got a list from my work with students and just my own thought about defining features of religion. So let's just go through it. My first one is, as you mentioned, that religions are systems of belief that are all-encompassing. In other words, they're worldviews. Here's what I want to differentiate about that. We're going to talk about this later, but in order for something to be a religion, it needs to be a belief in the supernatural. But if it's not a belief in the supernatural that is a worldview, then it's not a religion. So if I believe, for example, that there is some spiritual entity at the bottom of Loch Ness, that would just be to mishmash a few weird beliefs.
Okay.
That's not a religious belief, even though it's a belief in the supernatural. That's not the basis of a religion. Now, it could be the basis of a religion if you wanted to screw around with it. But that on its own is not. Well, we gotta. Maybe God doesn't want us to talk about this. He's screwing around with the microphone.
Oh, Jesus Christ is angry.
Oh, no.
God's tweeting right now.
Do you want the other one?
Another part is that in order for something to be a religious belief, it needs to be overriding. Mm-hmm. In other words, it needs to take the position of being the priority belief in someone's life. In other words, if you know society says one thing and my religion says another, well, I'm going to favor what my religion says. Yeah. If they don't do that, then I don't think they're really treating their belief as a religion.
It's the final authority.
Yeah. Another is it's got to draw on the supernatural. So if you don't believe in the supernatural, it's not really religion. Which, by the way, this is part of why there's an active discussion about whether Buddhism isn't really a religion. Because Buddhism, at least the traditional, I guess the original ideas of the Buddha, did not incorporate anything any belief in the supernatural. He was just talking about how the mind worked and ways that you can expand your mind.
Yeah, the deities only came after they contacted Hinduism.
Yeah.
So.
And,
Taoist is the same way.
Huh?
Taoist is the same way.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah, it's just you kind of just figure out how the universe works by thinking real hard about it.
Huh.
And there's no God, no spirituality. There's just figure out the world, think about it. And then arrive at a conclusion, and then think about that some more. And that's where Hattori is. Yeah.
Interesting.
I like Taoism, actually.
Interesting.
It's just think about stuff.
Maybe during this series, we will take the new philosophy of religion approach, and we'll do an episode just on that.
Cool.
Because that would not be something that would be normally found in a philosophy of religion class.
All right.
And, you know, I'll learn a lot about that. I think I'd
Alan
be interesting.
Watts, listen to or read any of his books. He's fantastic.
Let's incorporate that into the series.
Okay.
I like that.
Cool.
This is not necessary. This one you could argue with, but I think that it's decent. Religions subscribe to a non-physical characterization of a person. In other words, the idea of a soul. I would question whether something is a religion if it doesn't have that. Now, I think there are probably exceptions, so I don't know if this is an absolutely defining characteristic. But if you don't believe that there is something about being human that incorporates the stuff that is also related to God or the being that you worship, then I would question, well, then what would be our connection to that being, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that is, I think, compelling to a lot of people about Islam and Christianity is that they believe they have a little bit of God in them, and that's the soul. That's that immaterial part of the human being. And, I think that that's an important, at least, to consider a major part of religious belief.
I'd agree.
I think that a religious belief has to hold some sort of moral code.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe in some spiritual entity that began the universe, but that doesn't guide anything about how you should live, then I'm not sure that's a religion. I think that's just a belief in our origins.
And offhand, I don't know if I've ever heard of any kind of religion that doesn't speak to how you ought to conduct yourself.
No, I don't think so either. Have you?
Even if it's just a way of finding enlightenment or something. I mean,
I feel like that's a foundational
thing.
They always have a commandment or list of rules that they have to follow. That's
what again, I think it's because they're trying to answer those kind of big questions. Why am I here? What is it all for?
Social control.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're looking for those answers, you know, it tells you why are we here? Because God created this place and here's how he wants you to act while you're here.
Yeah. And here, the other way I think about this is I want to separate a person who is religious from a person who would check the box spiritual but not religious.
Yeah.
I think that you can believe that there is some, you know, immaterial beginning to the universe and it not affect the way you live and everybody basically can live however they want.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, well, there are some pluses to acknowledging this, but it's not necessary. And I think that you are spiritual and not religious because of having that. And I don't – and by the way, as a side note, even though I'm a staunch atheist, I'm not sure I have a huge problem with someone who is spiritual but not religious.
I don't either.
I don't really because when it gets right down to the practicalness of it, they're going to have to adopt some kind of moral theory that we've already talked about.
They're basically in the same boat as atheists in figuring out how to live.
Mm-hmm.
And they just might be a little more hopeful.
Yeah. They're maybe a little bit more hopeful and maybe they have less of an understanding of the science behind the universe. You know, it's
possibly, I don't know,
those things.
Might be a harmless little at worst, a harmless little fantasy.
Uh-huh.
At best, maybe they're onto something and maybe, you know, I'd be open to the idea of being spiritual. I'm not personally, but I'm open to it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Usually religions have rituals such as prayers, meditation, rituals to get in touch with God. I would think that a religion that didn't have any of that, that was purely intellectual, I would question whether that was a religion and not just a philosophical exercise.
Mm. Well, it wouldn't activate that portion of the brain.
Right.
So.
Right.
You wouldn't get the feeling.
I think it has to be related to an institution in order for it to be a religion. If it's just someone's individual beliefs, even if it has the other criteria, if it's just what they believe, then I don't think that counts as a religion.
So you can't have the Church of Me?
I don't think so.
Oh.
But I do.
I don't think you can have one in isolation. And I think that that just speaks to the idea that if your ideas are remotely compelling, either on the psychological, emotional, or intellectual level, then you're going to have other people who will follow them, and there'll be a way of life related to that, and it'll become a religion.
Yeah.
So maybe you could have something like this for a very short period of time, but I don't think that it would be legitimate if it was just you. And then, you know, religions produce writings or other things like art or symbols. This is something that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Any religion that didn't produce anything, it was just word of mouth and didn't have any symbology or writings or anything, I would question whether that was a religion or not. That would just be, I don't know, a trend, something temporary.
Mm-hmm.
So, this list is not perfect. Some of these you could probably get away with getting rid of, but those are the kinds of things that we're talking about. We're not talking about someone who is just spiritual. We're not talking about very abstract ideas that you can't pin down, though we are going to talk about those later when we talk about religious moderates. So if you look at that list and think, okay, this is really the subject matter, then it makes sense that one of the main things you're going to be talking about would be the Judeo-Christian Muslim belief. And all of those – so that's the majority of people who are religious on the planet by far. Right. Muslims believe in the same God that Jews and Christians believe. They just have differences in after that.
Yeah.
So since that's the vast majority of people on the planet and has the richest tradition of support, as in people writing about those beliefs and trying to support them, it makes sense that philosophy of religion would target that. That's the highest value target.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's what philosophy of religion does. And again, instead of debating whether – you know, whether Muhammad should be followed, is Muhammad divine or not, or those kinds of considerations. All of this hinges on does the God that these religions believe in exist. And since it all hinges on that, then it makes sense that most of philosophy of religion would be spent trying to answer that question. And right. It is.
No, that makes total sense.
Traditionally, again, this new idea of expanding it, I think we can consider that as well.
Like, so, otherwise, like the other direction kind of goes more to theology, I think.
Sure. So. Again, none of this matters if that God doesn't exist.
No.
And what I think is interesting about philosophy of religion is one of the reasons why I think, this is my theory, of why it for so long has focused on whether God exists or not and not these other things is because the arguments for God's existence are so weak. Mm-hmm. If they were strong, then it would focus more on other beliefs because you could say, hey, look, it's reasonable to assume that this God exists. Now, what does that mean? And then philosophy of religion would be a field that had more diversity to it. But it doesn't.
In a way, this is
at least it not nearly as much as you.
Well, no, and this is like the first primary roadblock you would get to whenever you first begin this kind of, this kind of trek. They would say, like, let's look into the philosophy of religion. Okay,
yeah,
is God even there?
Yeah,
that's the first question you ask.
Yeah, and it seems like this is considering there's so much literature and arguments around just this first bit.
Sure,
that to me is indicative of. Oh, something. But
as a side note, being exposed to this before I had the opportunity to take any religious studies courses prevented me from taking religious studies courses because I kind of don't. I don't know if this is going to sound, but I kind of don't care what people believe.
Look, it's all essentially the same thing. Anyway.
This is snarkily is what I was.
It all comes from the human brain, so it's all essentially the same thing.
Well, this is what I was saying in a snarky way earlier, that it doesn't matter if Superman could beat the Hulk if there's no such thing as superheroes.
Yeah. I guess I felt like I knew enough about one of the big religions, Christianity, to use it as a sample for that kind of stuff.
Well, and so many of these modern religions come from the same source that you can find so many. That's why I brought up the Babylonian thing, because
interesting.
It's all essentially from the same source, the human brain. And the human brain thinks the same way no matter what century it is.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And I hate to shoot down the whole higher thought process.
No, but for me it also is, coming from a background where I used to be religious, I feel like I've already I can understand where these people are coming from enough.
Right.
That I don't need to study all these other religions in depth so much. Like, I don't need to get so much into Islam and stuff. I know what it felt like to believe.
Yeah.
And I mean that. Like, I truly used to believe. So I know what it feels like to believe.
Yeah.
And so sometimes whenever you debate people who are religious, they'll say, well, you don't really know what it feels like. It's like, I do.
Yeah.
I know exactly how you feel. Yeah. I felt it.
And how old were you when you stopped being?
About 15.
15? Okay. I was only a believer for like 2 years. As a matter of fact,
I was 15, I was not hardcore, but I definitely was on board with it all. And, when I was 15, I began to question it. I didn't know philosophy words back then because I hadn't taken any. So I used to, people say, what are you? And I said, I don't know. I used to call myself, I say, I'm an atheist plus one. So I don't believe that there's no God, but I believe that something may have started everything, but I can't prove it.
Right.
Then that's what I would tell people. So I was
spiritual, but not religious.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that there were definitions of atheism, like positive and negative.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Back then, I just called myself an atheist plus one. Like, I'm not going to say I believe there's no God because I can't prove it. I just don't think there probably is.
Right.
And I didn't know that was a thing. Then I was like, oh, maybe I'm just agnostic. Before you said, read this paper, you're not really agnostic, you're an atheist. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm an atheist.
I did the same thing. I thought I was agnostic for a long time.
Until I learned what words mean.
I just didn't care.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think a lot of people start there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to just say one thing. Not only are there a wide variety of religions, obviously, but there are a wide variety of categories of religions. And so one of the things that I think people find somewhat unfair about philosophy of religion is that it focuses on one kind of belief, which is deism, the belief that God exists, or theism.
Right.
Technically, a deist is someone who believes God exists but doesn't believe that he has any tie to human affairs.
That's essentially a spiritual person, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I think you're, in effect, they would be like a spiritual person.
Practical
day to day, they'd probably be more like an atheist.
Probably. Well, that's why I don't.
Because it doesn't matter.
Yes, it makes no. It's academic in the worst sense of the word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Atheist, of course, is a person who rejects belief in God. It is not someone who necessarily believes God does not exist.
Right.
It is someone who simply rejects the belief that God does.
I would say that's probably that's what I consider myself. Is that what you are too?
Yes,
that
kind?
Like I've never actually met a strong atheist, someone who's like, no, I believe that there is no God.
I mean, I believe that there probably is no God.
Yeah, but that's a key word, though, and it actually matters a lot to philosophy and to science. Whenever you say, like, I believe it's probably not true, that's different than saying this is not true.
Well, the list of things that I would not actually put the word probably into my beliefs is extremely small.
No, I understand that.
You always need a hypothesis in any sort of scientific or thought project. You need to have a premise, a thought that you're starting.
At least a question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what a hypothesis is. And you don't go in thinking it's going to be yes or no. You say, oh, this might be it.
Sure.
But if it's proven wrong, then you don't get pissed off
about
it.
And if you say it might be it, after you do the experiment, you say it's probably this.
Yeah. Sure.
Until something better comes along.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's where we're at.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I think also the complaint is that philosophy of religion focuses on monotheism, the idea that there is just one God.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the polytheism is an interesting idea. But I think it's legitimate for a philosopher of religion to focus on monotheism, because if you can't prove that one God exists, why would it be easier to prove that more than one does?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get past that initial roadblock.
Right. And, you know, if you had a belief in polytheism that was similar to like the ancient Greeks,
mm-hmm.
who believed in these gods who were basically like beings running a soap opera in another dimension, my question would be, why? Right? How does this answer something about the world?
Because soap operas are fun.
Yeah.
Days of Zeus life.
I really think that half the people that I meet that are druids or whatever, I've met people, and there's a big population of people that follow the Nordic traditions.
Huh.
And the only reason the only reason that I can really get from them, and this is the boiled down distilled, is it's cool.
Right.
It's fucking cool.
Right.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thor is cool.
Yeah. They don't actually. Yeah. I think that's probably the perspective of the Satanist, too.
Yeah.
Is that they just think the pure rebellion is cool.
Yeah. It's cool. We get to make a lot of meat.
So, you know, from my perspective, is that's not really a religion. That's a social club.
I think so.
Since they don't actually believe or don't really care whether it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, I don't care about that.
Mm-hmm.
No, because religion does care if it's true. It purports to be the truth, capital T.
That's right. And if you're important. Not, if you're not really proposing that, or your beliefs don't propose that, then I don't care about considering them.
Especially because philosophy is concerned. We're out there looking for the truth.
Right.
You know, it's funny. We're like Mulder. The truth is out there, but we, you know.
Well, I mean, look. There really is either a God or not.
Right.
Either there is a spiritual aspect to the world that has some influence over where human beings came from and what we are and where we're going, or there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, those are the questions that we're really interested in considering. Whether you think it's cool that you hang out with people and do tarot, I don't give a fuck.
I mean,
if you don't believe it, you just think it's fun, that's fine. Now, if you believe
that's different.
That tarot actually does result in truth and that there's some connection to some other, okay, well, I would like to first narrow down what it is you believe. And if you can do that.
So basically, I have a follow-up question.
Right. A series of follow-up questions. What is it that you actually believe? And if you can't state that, then it doesn't matter that you think you believe it. You don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, look, like you were saying about the numbers thing earlier. A lot of people believe this stuff, and that could affect our lives, the fact that they've
very
this
much
stuff.
Affects our lives.
So it's important to
very much affects
and
our
even
life.
If you're a religious person, it's important to think about this stuff because, again, these other people who are religious like you or religious but different from you, it affects your life.
Yes.
You're in the world and you're part of it.
I would hope that it would be obvious to our listeners the way that religion affects our life. But just to just state a few of them, obviously there's some connection between terrorism and religious thinking. It's mm-hmm. not non-existent.
There's some connection between whether or not people should be allowed to marry people of the same sex in religious thinking.
How about,
should we be allowed to study stem cells
exactly.
in religious thinking?
Abortion.
Abortion and the personhood amendments in Colorado and other
mm-hmm.
states. Also, I think one of the ways that people don't think about this enough is the sheer amount of time wasted.
Oh, God, yeah.
When you think about the amount, if there is no God, the amount of time that people spend going to church, the person running the church, all of the maintenance of the church, the writing that they do, the time that people spend in church, going to church.
I know people who go to church 3 times a week.
Sure. I know people who do that as well.
And if they're Catholic, that's a 3-hour
That
mass.
Is ultimately my feeling on religious people at the end of the day is kind of one of a little bit of quiet sadness. I kind of feel like they are wasting a large portion of their life.
And money. Wasting their funds, wasting space on the, for buildings in urban areas, all for doing something that at best accomplishes nothing, at worst accomplishes bad things. Now, that's a little cynical because it's one of the things that we should talk about and we are going to talk about later in philosophy of religion is even if it's not true, is it worth believing in?
And that's where people get into like the social club aspect of it. And there are positives that come out of that and community ties.
Sure.
But the I think the most atheists say is imagine if you took all that creativity and time and resources and money
to solve some of these big problems.
And applied it towards things that we have really good reasons to believe are real.
Yeah.
Like actual truth.
How about income inequality?
Right.
How about the fact that poverty raises our population?
Or not hindering scientific progress or just putting other in other ways. Like, you know, instead of having these really – because of the way the beliefs can be diametrically opposed to each other, why don't we just broaden this social club? You know, like tear down some of these walls and, between our social clubs.
And corruption in failed states. Yeah. Like what's going on in Mexico right now is absurd.
Yeah.
It disease makes, control.
From our perspective,
there's so many things.
Yeah.
From our perspective as atheists, a lot of it seems so unnecessary, and you have so much unnecessary suffering that comes from it whenever you could pull these resources and probably – I don't want to sound like a utilitarian person here completely because – but
We're all partially utilitarian, yeah. Nick.
You're not going to offend true. Anyone.
But you can really you can really, I think, you can really increase the amount of happiness on the planet if we had all these resources that we have to devote towards other endeavors.
Oh, yeah, this is 10% tithing thing?
This is something that Stephen Hawking has been talking about recently, that the human species has these huge fundamental problems, and they're not problems that we don't know anything about how to solve. We know how to approach the resolution or treatment of diseases and extending human life. Mm-hmm. We know how to, for example, get rid of corruption in governments. We've had countries that have set up systems to do this. It's not like we know nothing about it. It's not like it's easy, but it's not like we know nothing about it. It's not like we know nothing about how to have a pluralistic society where people of different beliefs can coexist and not kill each other. Mm-hmm. And we're not doing it. And whether the human species survives –
Depends a lot on that. Here's an idea, like one of the negatives of this kind of religious thinking. The idea, like, you know, our Constitution is technically amenable and changeable.
Sure.
But
they're called amendments.
Right. But the way a lot of people look at it is from a very religious point of view of, no, these are the amendments.
Right.
You can't change the Ten
Commandments.
Now,
why is that? Yeah.
You know, but I think to some people, whenever you talk about amending the Constitution or changing old amendments, like getting rid of the second one or things, or just changing it.
Sure. Yeah.
They look at that as saying, like, that's
– It's sacrilege.
That would be the same thing as saying, let's just edit the Ten Commandments.
Sure.
God gave us these Ten Commandments. You can't just edit them.
Right.
And I think that they really look at it unintentional maybe, but yeah, it's idealized.
Like, I do want to edit the Ten Commandments.
They're like, you know what? George Washington liked these Bill of Rights, so it's good enough for him.
I don't want to honor my mother and father.
Honor my mother and father only if they deserve it.
Well, George
Carlin,
you know
what? It's okay if you worship other gods, but just think twice about it.
Everyone should look up George Carlin and how he reduces the Ten Amendments down to two.
Ten Commandments to two?
Yeah. Basically,
don't be a jerk.
Honor, he says, honor the person who provides your nookie, and thou shalt try awfully hard not to kill anyone.
Nice.
I like it.
I can still take your stuff.
I guess the last thing I'm going to end with is the idea of pantheism. Polytheism, there's a legitimate reason why it's not considered in philosophy or religion. Pantheism doesn't have this. So monotheism is the idea that there's one god. Polytheism is there's multiple gods. The arguments for God's existence can apply to polytheism just as well, if not better, because if you can't prove one, you can't prove many. But pantheism is the idea that the idea of God is not what people normally associate it with. God is kind of like the bigger picture of the universe or the multiverse itself.
Uh-huh. So why call it God?
But it's because that it's the claim that it is some form of being that is on a path, and we need to figure it out to get on board.
This is sort of Taoism, but they don't make it a being. I think I will really.
Well, that depends on how you define being.
Exactly. I'm so excited to talk to you about it.
We're going to have a whole episode, and I'm going to learn a lot about this. Cool. This is going to be really interesting.
I'm really excited.
And you might have to lead that episode on Taoism, because I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, I don't. Have you actually led an episode entirely yet?
Would you want to?
Sure.
This is your assignment. Should you,
you know, decide to accept it? Do you know any? I mean, we've talked about possibly trying to find some guests for this series. If you know any people who teach it or anything, I'd welcome having them Skype in too. Because I don't know much about Eastern religions.
That would be great. What's nice is my sister was a theism minor.
Oh,
her master's.
Wait. A theism?
Yeah, theology.
Theology. Okay.
Yes, there we go. Theology. It was like creative writing and theology.
Right.
Just for shits and grins, I guess. So she knows some people. So I haven't been able to call her yet.
Yeah. No. We'll get there.
Cool. All right.
So I'm going to go ahead and favor the modern idea of philosophy of religion that polytheism should be something that is considered more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that gets abstract and out of their comfort zone, and that's okay. Or at least it's going to be out of my comfort zone. But I like being out of my comfort zone, so I'm looking forward to that.
I think one of the best ways to knock someone who's religious out of their comfort zone is to tell them that you know exactly what it's like to be an atheist. You don't believe in Zeus? That's exactly how I feel about all the other gods. Like, so whenever they say that they can't relate to people like that, I say, you can. You know exactly how I feel.
Absolutely.
Not only can you relate to me, you know literally how I feel.
Exactly.
And you felt that and you've experienced it and life went on.
Yeah. So look, we're going to learn a lot about these arguments. We're going to also make fun of them because some of them are hilarious. But we want to make fun of them in an intellectually informed way. We don't want to just bash them.
No.
And I also am going to, again and again, subscribe to the idea that people who believe them are not stupid. It's that these ideas are seductive.
And they're so rarely questioned.
They're rarely questioned. And questioning them properly is actually a surprisingly tricky business.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these arguments, they sound obviously ridiculous. But when you get down to brass tacks to try to figure out what's wrong with them, it's not that easy.
No, and sometimes enlightenment hurts. I mean, should be
a bumper sticker.
I really mean that one of my favorite things in philosophy. Everyone, go look up Plato's Parable of the Cave.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Sometimes it's not something that's always pleasant.
Sure.
And I think that's why a lot of people just don't question it.
Well, sure. Because
why people say ignorance is bliss. I mean, mm-hmm. this sort of thing can mess people up.
Yeah.
It could have messed you up pretty bad, but you embraced it and you were happy that you discovered.
Well, I think it did for a while mess me up.
If you consider how much of his life to that point had been so into this social club. And Jehovah's Witnesses don't react kindly to people who decide they don't want to be in the club.
No, you're on another planet after you leave.
Really?
Every one of the people you knew no longer has anything to do with you.
So is your family all Jehovah's Witnesses?
My direct family is, except for my brother.
Okay.
Who I didn't talk to for probably 15 years. Really? Ever.
He became atheist before you? Or?
Not atheist. He just left the church. He was expelled, basically. Expelled.
Your brother's cool, by the way.
He is a cool guy.
Spelled, so they're kind of Amish. Shun the non-believer.
They do.
Same thing with like the Mormons kind of do
that
too.
The Mormons do that too, biblical references to why.
But given that sort of thing, I understand.
Shitty Mormon family then.
Well, but given that, I understand why a lot of people don't want to question this stuff. Because I think it's more of an unconscious thing. I think they unconsciously realize that their faith is a house of cards. And if you fuck with it too much, you're going to make the whole thing collapse, and then that could really ruin your family dynamic.
Sure.
You can ruin holidays.
Yep.
It really can mess with people.
Absolutely.
So it's not something that I take lightly whenever I try and debate with people about this sort of thing, because I do think that as a person who doesn't believe, as an atheist and as a philosopher, that you have a bit of a moral responsibility to be mindful of possibly destroying someone's life.
Well, yeah, we're going to have an episode on this, actually.
And also, I think, just to go the scientific route, is your brain is wired for certain thoughts. And if you've been thinking and activating this certain part of your brain your entire life for 27 years, it's going to be harder to rewire your brain, because neurons don't just happen.
What's funny is that I found it very easy.
Well, it's probably because you were trained in logic.
Yeah.
And since he was young, he hadn't – it's a lot easier for you to reprogram a young brain.
Yeah.
And so the older you get, the more neurons are going through certain pathways. So it's harder – it is physically harder to change the way the brain thinks and to build those essentially brain muscles, even though it's fat. so, I mean, you are literally fighting against yourself physically. You're changing the way your brain works. So that's hard for some people. It's easier for others, and it's easier if you're younger. So I think that's another thing that we have to go into it just scientifically and thinking biologically.
I always try to be like less dismissive nowadays than I used to be in like my early 20s. Whenever I became an atheist, I think I was much more of a mean person then.
Yeah.
As far like intellectually speaking, like I would treat their arguments with derision and stuff like that. And I think and I understand how I used to feel, but it's just I like as you get older, you see like some people really need this stuff. And even if I don't think they should, they really do.
Sure.
And so I think that it doesn't make me want to not talk about what I feel is the truth because I'm a philosopher. And I feel like if I've got the truth, I want to spread it around because I have a love of wisdom. But I do feel like it's important to be aware of it, at the very least, to be aware of it.
Well, we're going to have an episode on what does it mean to be an atheist, practically and intellectually. What does it mean when you run into people who are religious? What is the best way to live as an atheist? Also, how do you live without religious belief? I'll give you just a little bit of insight into my life personally. Even though I firmly believe in atheism, it's not that I don't have moments that it's not difficult. It is difficult sometimes.
Yeah,
it's difficult to believe that there's no purpose to any of this stuff. Why when life is very difficult, which sometimes it seems like it can be too often. you wonder, well, what is this that we're struggling for all this stuff, but it actually in my head, I know that it is going to result in nothing. So why are we doing it?
See, for you, Norm, the problem is that when you find yourselves in times of trouble, Mother Mary does not comfort you.
No.
She doesn't whisper words of wisdom.
You know what's funny to me is I find that thought liberating.
Huh.
I think, well, it doesn't matter. So I'm going to do what I want to do. And
like a sandbox video game.
Have you?
I fuck it up.
Well, this is what drew me away from, I think everyone probably goes through this to some degree, but I considered myself for a long time and still do an existentialist philosopher.
Sure.
And this sort of thing, that feeling of what, they would call nausea and that sort of thing, and that is something that I always feel.
Sure.
And that dread is something I always feel.
Sure.
But there were philosophers, though, who said, it's okay, it's a good thing.
Sure.
Because it means I get to make up the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
But you had, philosophers
it's
like...
kind of a bullshit response.
It is.
If nothing...
It is, but like,
everything means nothing.
No, but like, philosophers like, Sartre and all that, they really struggled with this sort of thing. And I so identified with that. Like, it was weird. I felt like I... discovered or I in a weird way I feel like I invented existentialism because I stumbled onto this and believed all of it
before you started reading about it
and then I had never heard of it and then someone
isn't
said
it wonderful when you do that and either in philosophy or science you come into an idea that is fully supported and you're like I had this idea years ago
there is no new way of thinking.
That was one of the most profoundly powerful moments in my life when I was probably in 11th grade. Someone said we're going to learn about an existentialist hero and stuff like that and I was like and then like
was
when
it
We studied Luke Skywalker in that too, and also Frodo Baggins too. You can laugh though; it's the idea of a doomed hero, someone who goes on a hero's journey, but with the caveat that they will probably not survive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So Frodo Baggins knows that the ring will destroy him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But he goes on the journey anyways. Ultimately,
right.
Luke Skywalker in Empire Strikes Back knows that he can't possibly beat Darth Vader.
Right.
But he goes to rescue his friends anyways.
Right.
It's a doomed hero's journey.
Sure.
I like that kind of Joseph Campbell hero's journey stuff. But mm-hmm. whenever we first learned about that, in learning that, they taught us the basic idea of behind what existentialism is.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird. It was like thoughts and words put to my emotions and shit I had been feeling for years at that point. And I had such a weird feeling with it. I was like, oh my God. It's like discovering I have a family? I didn't know. I thought I was an orphan. I thought I was alone.
Yeah.
That was I really enjoyed. That's what drew me to philosophy in general.
Well, we need to cover that because the direction that I think we're going to go is that these arguments for the existence of God don't end up working. Again, it's going to be interesting to show how they don't, and we're going to learn a lot. But if they don't work, then what does that mean? And that's something that I think is legitimate to cover, and something that needs to be covered. And it's not exactly an easy sell. No. Right? So, hey, nothing can be yours.
Everything that gives you meaning and hope and joy for the future?
Right.
It's all nothing. Yeah. That's all smoke and mirrors.
Right. Sorry.
But here's the good news.
Right.
Now you can wing it, though. See, for me, that's an exciting thing.
Well, yeah, sure.
Now kind you can wake shit up.
Yeah. Sure.
I understand why people feel that kind of hopelessness and despair.
Sure.
I fundamentally feel like that's built into me, and I feel like it's the existentialist in me who struggles on despite that.
Right. I wonder if it's the being part of a religion and then losing it because that was your foundation. I wonder if that's why.
It might be. I mean, I wasn't
raised in it.
I always tell people, like, at the end of the day, you're going to realize that you're Sisyphus, and you got to find a reason you like rolling that rock up that hill yourself, because it's all you've got.
Yeah, when we get to that episode, we're going to read some Camus, we're going to read some Sartre, and we're going to read some Tolstoy.
Yeah.
Nice.
And this is a serious question that I like to pose to atheists. Well. And, you know, what is the best way to live? And what is the best way to approach people who are religious?
Yeah, but that's ultimately what I come down and I tell people whenever they say, like, so if you don't believe in any of that, it's like I just find different reasons to keep rolling that rock up the hill every day.
Sure. Yeah. So look, I think we're jazzed. We're going to learn a lot. And next episode, we are going to cover the nature of God, as in what does it mean to be God, and also cover the weirdest argument you probably will ever run into, the ontological argument for the existence of a God.
Yeah, it's
and there. It's good to cover both of those at the same time because they're intertwined. Okay. We're basically going to look at an argument that says that God exists by definition. We're going to have a good time.
Yeah, have fun with that.
So, we hope you've enjoyed listening, and we're going to try to take this course in a legitimate way to where if you listen to the entire course, you will get a philosophy of religion course that you could plausibly have paid money for.
I'm very happy.
Yeah. Right on. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks for starting a new course. Everyone out there, please believe responsibly. Into the grave.